Other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Friday, April 4th.
It's Friday.
It's my favorite day. Know when I get to sleep in tomorrow.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a gloomy one.
It's a gloomy one today.
This weather is just crazy.
I know. That's and it crazy. Was sunny like a few minutes ago. I don't know what's going on. But all this, I posted all this earthquake talk is really making me shaky, you know,
because no pun intended.
No pun intended. Well, it's definitely intended. And, I'm feeling, we've been talking about it almost every day. And I keep thinking about it. It just nags at me. It never has before.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think as I'm getting older, I'm getting a little like
you're making my anxiety
cat.
Worse about this.
I know.
Sam.
I should never talk about this. I know. I forgot. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Actually, we're never going to have an earthquake as long as you're here, Charlotte. I guarantee it.
What have you been posting?
That's all I posted. That verbatim, what I just told you. Yeah.
So it's leaving you feeling uneasy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. But, well, it's bad, but the earthquake in Chile kind of put my mind at rest a little bit just because in my strange mind.
It, like, releases some pressure?
Yeah, that's
okay,
released
I hope
some pressure.
So,
so that's in my mind. I'm a little bit easier now, but
good.
Probably for no reason. So I read this story this morning, and it's strange. So a Pakistani baby has been accused of attempted murder at 9 months old. 9 months old.
Yeah.
Like, what? How is that possible?
Did the mother die or
I guess,
something?
No. The baby at 9 months, apparently, was with the father and other family members, were booked for throwing rocks at gas company officials. In a working class area called Ahata Tan, I shouldn't even
yeah,
try.
We don't care.
Yeah, I shouldn't try and say the name. But yeah, so they've been booked, and the baby for
yeah. So
the
he was just part
came,
of the group or something. Somebody,
yeah, I mean, how a 9 month old can be throwing the rocks? I have no idea. And how throwing rocks can be attempted? How is that attempted murder?
Well, maybe they were trying to kill some people.
But
I
that's
don't
what
know,
they got booked for. But that cop has been later suspended.
Yeah,
but well, it's gone to court.
Yeah.
And everyone in court is saying, what kind of police do you guys have?
Yeah,
how can a 9 month old, I mean, they're just starting to crawl.
Yeah.
How can he be on attempted murder trial? Like, that's so ridiculous.
It's like they're so backwards in those countries, you know? They're like stuck in the Stone Age, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
And it's just that there's no explanation for this, like, weird and crazy stuff that they do.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we'll never be able to relate to it. I just don't understand,
no.
You know?
Not at all.
Yeah, and yeah, but I guess in a place where they probably abuse a lot of kids and stuff, it's probably not so crazy that they would view a baby as like a person or something, you know.
I guess so,
like a grown person. But yeah,
but I can a baby even throw rocks? Like, he doesn't even know.
No. It was just I'm sure it was like with his dad or something, and they arrested the whole group.
And then the article said that in the courtroom the baby was crying. But it's like, I mean, any night, like, it was just on his dad was holding him on his shoulder. Like, babies cry. He's not crying because he's in a courtroom. He has no idea where he is. Like, how ridiculous is that?
It's very ridiculous. Maybe it's an April Fool's joke. I don't know.
Maybe.
It sounds pretty weird.
Right? Very strange.
I know. So we have a great guest coming up in a few minutes, and it's going to be an entertaining show, I'm sure. A few things just to bring up. I guess they're running out of time as far as the box, right?
That. Yeah, they've
the
sent
plane.
Airline jets out. Sorry, yeah, two ships out to hunt for
what they call the pinger, and it's yeah. I mean, I. what I don't believe is how CNN has been totally like engulfed in this for like weeks now. There's like as though there's like nothing else on TV, you know, nothing yeah. else in the world is going mm-hmm. on. And come on, I mean, I understand it's mystery. It's, you know, people are curious and everything. And it is a major thing, but still, you know, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, there's
and
other
now
things going on.
I feel
on.
Like it's got to the point where people have heard it so much.
Right.
And there's been so much speculation that people have kind of tuned out.
Yeah, you become desensitized to it yeah. because how much can you hear of the same thing, you
exactly.
know? Exactly. But they sort of like held on to this and they're not letting go.
No, they're not.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And I feel like it's been... How long has it been?
I no,
feel like
almost the black, a month, I think.
The black box has to have died by now.
Well, they're saying that it is, like, you know, on its last...
Yeah,
last few days or something. So, yeah.
I don't think they'll find it.
They probably not won't sound, find it.
Not like I'm looking at life through the glass half full, but...
Right.
Or half empty.
Right.
Half empty.
Half empty.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we know you're an optimistic person. You don't have to explain.
But I don't have much faith in the troops that are
searching
that have been on this story. No offense to them. But
yeah, I mean, it's like you don't even know where to search. You know, how do you do this?
Exactly.
And it's an ocean. You
yeah.
know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So so that's that. Another thing, I mean, this is a sad story, but I really don't get these people. I guess this German skydiver was participating in a jump in Arizona of 222 people. It was like a jump of that many people at once.
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't even know how they would manage to do something like this, but apparently she died doing this. And I guess she just jumped and trying to do a jump that changed the formation in the air. And I guess what happened is, well, I don't know. I guess she just kind of maybe just fell, you know, to the ground, you know. Yeah, the parachute probably didn't open and stuff. So, but
skydiving's scary.
Skydiving.
And especially with that many people, why would you want to change the formation? Just stick to what you're supposed to
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
This is like about life or death.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, how do you get 222 people to jump out of a plane at the same time? You know, I mean, what is that? You know, I can't even see how logistically it's possible, but
yeah.
I guess it is. But people are crazy. You know, they're saying she had 1,500 jumps before that.
Wow.
So she was a pro, you know?
Adrenaline junkie.
Right. And they were trying to achieve a world record or something. But
I was about to say, was it for the Guinness World Records or something like that?
Yeah, for a world record. I don't know if it was for Guinness or anything. But it's an unfortunate thing, you know. But I just don't understand these people with the extreme sports. I mean, and many of them end up dying at what they're doing, mm-hmm. you know. It's like the guy with the crocodile and all that stuff.
Right? There's so many crazy sports now. And I feel like people make up different ones every day that are more and more extreme.
Right.
It's like, just stick to running.
Yeah.
Just stick to something like...
Yeah, exactly, you know.
Just stick to something normal. Don't put your life at risk.
I know. And
it must be cool, though, jumping out of a plane. You.
Right.
Must be insane.
And the feeling is probably exhilarating as hell, you know. I mean, I'm sure it's great.
But I don't know, that feeling of like losing your stomach.
Yeah.
Like when you go like a super steep roller coaster.
Uh-huh. I know.
Your like stomach gets lost.
Yeah. No, you have to have a certain personality, I think, to be able to do these
definitely.
Things, you know. Mm-hmm. And to grow up with it. Like in Australia, I guess there's a lot of extreme sports going on there. You know, bungee jumping and all that is coming from there, I think. So,
bungee jumping scares me too. Probably even more so than jumping out of a plane.
Really?
Because if the cord breaks, I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
It's not like you have a hope of a parachute.
Right.
It's you're kind of just
bouncing
around, and if it breaks, it breaks, you know?
And there's no point to it either. You know, at least you skydive, you can see things.
Yeah.
You know, it's like an experience, you know?
I heard there was a pair. I really want to go parasailing really bad.
Mm.
I've tried to go 3 times, and all times have been canceled.
Really?
So I think it's telling me not to go.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think this is a sign that I shouldn't go. But it was somewhere in Los Angeles or around this area.
Uh-huh.
They were parasailing and something happened and the parasail went into a brick wall.
Oh,
like the
God.
Side of a wall, and that was it.
God.
Dead. And I've heard other stories where you get sucked under the water.
Wow.
And yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
yeah,
I think,
stay away from that.
Yeah, I think I shouldn't do that.
Yeah,
I think
just go on roller coasters.
Yeah, I think I'm being told that not to do it. I was sad. The last time it got canceled was on my birthday.
Yeah.
It was in Catalina Island, and they called the morning. It was, we were supposed to go in an hour's time. Like, oh, the boat had to go to, back to the mainland. I was so disappointed. So disappointed. It's all I wanted to do. Basically, the main reason we went to Catalina.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's disappointing. Yeah. When is your birthday, by the way?
January 16th.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it wasn't that far.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. That was when my mom came.
Oh, okay.
Came to visit.
That's true. And, right before you started. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, so we have to wait almost a whole year to wish you a happy birthday.
Thankfully, I don't want to keep getting older.
I know.
I'm okay with.
Yeah, listen to her. 23 years old. Come on, man. I'd give my left testicle to be 23 years old again. Are you kidding me?
I like this age.
I'm sure you do. Wow. It's great. Okay, well, let's bring in our guest who's sitting here impatiently, I might add, because he wants to be part of the show. So here he is, Kevin Stay. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
I can hardly contain myself.
Yeah. You totally look like a person full of energy, so I'm not surprised, you know. It's like I'm like that. I can't sit in one place for too long, you know. It's like you have to move and things like that. Are you like that?
I'm pretty relaxed, but when I'm energetic, I'm energetic.
Yeah.
I have big bursts of energy and then sleep.
Yeah. I know. Sleeping is good, but I don't do a lot of it, you know? So I should do more. And then what happens is I get really tired during the day, so I take a couple hours.
Nap.
Yeah, I take a nap, but then the nap turns from an hour and a half to 3 hours because I can't get up. So there goes my day, you know? So, Kevin, welcome to the show. Where are you originally from? Are you from L.A.?
I'm from L.A. I was born in Hollywood, actually. But
really?
I grew up all over in Oregon, Singapore, Santa Fe, Milwaukee,
wow.
Michigan.
That's interesting. So how come you moved a lot?
Schools.
Really?
Yeah. I wanted to go to better and better schools. And my dad was a professor, and he kept changing residencies, and I would follow. And then
I see. Okay, so that made sense. So you followed your parents pretty much in the beginning.
In the beginning,
yeah.
And then when I got to a school that I didn't like, I actually asked to leave.
Really?
And I go back to Oregon from Milwaukee, and they stayed in Milwaukee, and I went to Oregon.
Wow.
At 12.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
At 12, you went by yourself?
At 12, yeah.
And where did you stay?
I stayed with my best friend's parents. Mm-hmm. My best friend's hippie parents.
Really?
So they it was great. They were never there. They were always just running around protesting things.
Yeah. So they were like your legal guardians or something while you were in school?
I don't know if they were considered my legal guardians.
I mean, there was no transaction,
no transaction
saying that they are. Yeah.
No, they just sent some money to them to take care of me, and then I stayed in this little extra
room.
Wow,
that takes a lot.
Yeah.
I'm amazed looking back that they let me do that, and I have to give them a lot of credit for that because they let me follow my heart and do what I wanted.
Yeah. So this was like you were in Oregon, and then you moved to another place, and then you wanted to go back, right?
Yeah.
Did you say Minnesota, was it? Minneapolis?
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, sorry. Milwaukee. Well, next door.
Yeah,
much.
One more winter of that, and it would have been all over.
That's Wisconsin, right?
Yes. Yeah, Wisconsin.
Right. Yeah.
It was crazy.
Which is just as cold as Minnesota.
Yeah.
Just as crazy. I know. I remember I went to Minnesota. I was really young, like maybe 17. And I followed this girl who sort of like, we both lived in Vegas. She moved back home to Minnesota. So I went to see her. And I totally was not prepared. I mean, it was winter. I had, you know, leather-soled shoes. I mean, you don't walk on the snow and on the ice like that, you know. And jeans. Jeans is not good in the cold, you know.
Yeah.
It gets very cold in your jeans. So I was totally not prepared. And then in the car, you know, it gets stuck in like in the ice and stuff, and you have to pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, how could people live like this? You know, I mean, what is this? You know, I have to you have to go to work. You have to get up an hour earlier in case you get stuck or to shovel out your driveway and stuff like that.
The first day that there was actually with wind chill of 74 below zero.
Wow.
I was like, I can't even fathom that.
I
remember seeing on the news. I was like, that can't possibly be true. And they were like, you can't go outside. It was like, okay, this is a far cry from Oregon, where they've sold all their snow machines because it never snows; it only rains.
Wow. So So you grew up there in Oregon. How many years before did you return to your parents, or did they move there?
They wanted to live together again, so he changed residencies to Santa Fe, and I moved with them from Oregon and they came from Milwaukee, and we moved to Santa Fe together.
New Mexico.
But right. I applied to a school there. That was their sort of like lure to get me there. I applied to the school there, the United World College of the American West. And instead of accepting me to that one, they accepted me to the one in Singapore.
Oh, really?
So after planning to have us all together in Santa Fe, it didn't work out that way. I took off at 15 to Singapore.
Wow. Yeah.
You see, I mean, very well traveled.
Yeah, obviously. And a lot of balls, too, I mean, to be able to do that stuff. Yeah. I remember I came here, my parents sort of sent me here at 16, but I stayed with some family in Vegas, you know, that's where I moved to. And then after that, I sort of like moved, well, I did move in with this girlfriend, and I was 17, she was 16. And it was, so I started my life early on as well, you know, but it's amazing. Did you know anybody there when you were moving?
No, not at all.
But you moved to a dorm and things like that with those other people?
It was a dorm. Yeah, I was one of the young ones. Yeah. I was 15.
So at 15, you were going to college?
Yeah.
Really?
I graduated school 2 years early to go.
So you're smart.
And I took, I don't know, smart, this is all subjective. Or objective, whatever.
Like, but at least you liked school or you believed in it.
I did. I really wanted to go to a good school and I really wanted to learn all that I could. And I could tell that, you know, the American system wasn't quite analytical enough for what I needed. And
So in Singapore, they speak English? I mean, English-speaking college.
It was an expat school, really, that was transferring into the United World College system, which is a program that's run by Prince Charles. Well, not anymore. I think it's Queen Noor or whatever.
Right.
It's a program that's meant to foster world leaders and foster sort of an understanding of various cultures, because there were like 60 different nationalities represented at that school.
Wow.
Pretty interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah. So you were there for how long?
I was there for 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
Yeah.
And was that all you needed for college? Or, I mean, did you finish that quickly too?
That was the hardest program ever, because they give you exams at the end of 2 years.
Really?
On everything you've just learned.
That's
in 2 years.
That's what it's like in England when I grew up.
Oh, the A-levels.
Sucks.
Yeah, the A-levels and O-levels. Yeah, it's the same thing, but with the International Baccalaureate program, they add in all the sort of like international, you know.
Yeah, when I came to America, I loved the schooling system because it's like 2 months of work and then you have an exam. It's like perfect. And then if you have like a good class, you get a month's worth of material. It's like, okay, I can do this.
I can handle that. I can retain that.
Yeah, 2 years is too much to remember.
It was kind of crazy. But it made everything else easy afterwards. When I got to college in the United States, I went to USC. It was easy breezy. I hardly ever went to class. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mom. I hardly ever went
never
to class.
Never went to class, probably graduated with honors, right?
I got 3.85.
Wow. Yeah.
I just
she wasn't kidding when she said you were smart. I mean, obviously you have to be a good student too, and you want to have you have to want to be there. But at the same time, you know, I mean, the thing is that obviously your educational ambitions and goals were unusual, you know, for someone your age.
Well, I loved learning, and I credit all of this to an alternative elementary school that I went to, where they let you sign up for classes that you wanted. And if you actually wanted to learn something, you could ask the teachers, I want to learn origami, or I want to learn how to make films. And they would go learn something and bring it back as a course.
Wow.
And so if you got there early enough in the morning, you'd sign up for classes for the day or for the week or for the month. And if you got there early enough, then you'd get the good classes. So there was incentive to go, an incentive to learn, and there was subjects they were interested in. It wasn't like forced, you know, here's your specific subjects that you have to take and that's it. Like everything was about the joy of learning. And I've kept that with me my whole life in every realm of my life.
Wow. So that's, you're very fortunate that way. Yeah.
What did you graduate in?
I didn't actually graduate. I went for business and film.
Oh, cool.
And I dropped out to go on tour with Madonna.
Oh, really?
Well, I was just reading, because I was singer, dancer, choreographer, director. It's like, whoa, your resume is insane.
Yeah.
And then you went on tour with Madonna. Wow. Was that thing?
I have career
ADD.
Hold
on. We'll get to that in just a minute. No, but I wanted to ask you just after all the schooling, you never graduated?
No.
Are you serious?
No, I dropped. I actually, in rehearsals, while I was actually on tour, I was still in school. And I actually took my coursework with me to Japan for the first month that we were doing the tour. And by the end of it, I was like, I am wasting this opportunity sitting here studying meteorology in the hotel. And I could be out, like, living life and being on tour and really being present and having fun and, like, making the most of this experience. Right. So I dropped out then.
So the business and film sort of like went by the wayside, and you decided, what, you're going to be a dancer?
I kind of fell into it.
Oh, okay.
It just is something I could do and was good at, and then I got hired, and I never stopped working once I kind of got hired. So,
when did you start dancing? At what age?
I was 18.
Really?
Yeah.
And you became interested in that and everything?
Yeah. Well, it was easy and it was fun, and I enjoyed it. It was very easy.
Yeah.
I guess from my gymnastics background, it was very easy, and I enjoyed it. It was fun, and I got to meet really great people. And then all of a sudden, I was working, and the money came in. I was like, wow. I could work at Taco Bell, which I did for 3 days. I could work at Taco Bell, or I could be on tour.
That's true.
Let me go on tour.
Wow. So how did you fall into it now?
Oh, I was going to go travel with my best friend, who I'd stayed with in Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And he had done the overseas foreign exchange program, and we were going to go share each other's countries, right? And he never got his money together. And I waited around in LA for a year waiting for him to get his money together and took class while I was waiting.
Uh-huh.
And I ran out of money. And I was like, I have no money. What do I do? And I was like, well, I dance. And I heard about an audition for an agent. I went to the audition and I got the agent.
Wow.
The next day she called me for an audition. I went to the audition. I got the audition and I was working 3 days later.
Really?
Wow.
So, but I mean, how were you that good that they picked you? I mean, had you been dancing at different places?
No, I was dancing at USC, and then the teacher at USC actually invited me to come to his studio and take his classes at his studio. So he saw I had potential and just wanted to develop that more. And I'm so grateful to him, Mark Lawrence.
Wow.
from years
Very
ago.
Very nice.
And I had a lot of friends that were street dancers on the street. And I would go hang out with them and just, pop and lock and random things like that.
Wow. You obviously just had kind of the it factor.
It was fun and easy. I don't know. For me, it was easy because of my gymnastics background. So I already had the balance. I had the flexibility. I had the stretch and the center. Mm-hmm. And so when they told me choreography, I just literally had to do it.
I see. So, yeah. So we didn't talk much about the gymnastics and everything. So this is something you developed when? During your teens?
Yeah. I started when I was 7. And then I let it go when I moved to Milwaukee when I was 11 or so. I got injured. My knees, I was growing too tall. I was growing tall too quickly.
Really?
I was in the Olympic program. They wanted me to put me in that course, and I had to move in with the coach and everything. And at that point, my mom was like, I can't afford it, and your knees are going bad. So.
That's true. So that was that.
Nip that in the bud, yeah.
So how does that injury figure in with your dancing? I mean,
well, that's the thing. I thought I would never be able to do dance on that level, and I just played it very safe with my knees over all these years. And I've only had one knee injury, believe it or not, in 20 some years of dancing.
Wow.
And that was on tour with A.R. Rahman. I tore my meniscus from dancing on concrete.
Ouch.
For 15 hours a day for a month and a half.
Good.
Yeah. And then I stopped. I stopped right there pretty much in order to heal my knee and just to do lighter work.
Yeah.
Right.
Sounds painful.
So, yeah.
I did the show on the torn meniscus.
Wow.
Yeah, on the show. Sometimes I had it wrapped with ice while I was in the show.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty scary, but it takes a lot of determination, and persistence. That's pretty cool. So so tell us a little bit about that. So you auditioned for what? Did you know it was going to be a Madonna tour, or is that?
Well, this was my first audition was for Debbie Gibson.
Oh, okay.
In the Electric Youth video with Barry Lather.
Right. So what year was that? Do you remember?
Oh, 89.
89.
89, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you don't look that old, at all,
I wouldn't say it on the air.
you don't have
to. I'm proud of it. I'm 44. I'm very proud of my age.
Yeah, you look very young.
I feel like I've earned every damn year that I've
There you go.
I don't know if I'd want to go back to be 23, although it's a wonderful time. I don't know if I want to go all the way back.
Yeah. Wait till you're in your 50s. You will.
Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah, everything goes as you age, man. Yeah. I'm telling you. Yeah. So you went on tour with Debbie Gibson, and that was, a tour in the United States?
Well, that was a video. That was a video.
Oh, that was video.
And then a year later, I was on tour with Madonna.
I see. So you were dancing in Debbie's video.
Yeah.
And there was no YouTube or anything back then. So was there MTV at the time?
There was MTV, lots of MTV. We had, there was actually a whole special on the video that they played because it was I don't know, $1 million video.
Wow.
I know, right?
And wow. And
you could probably make it for like $10,000 now looking at it. Oh, lasers, woo!
But back then, like $1 million is way more than...
Oh, yeah. But people were spending money on videos. Wow. Yes, Michael Jackson's were. Black or White was like $4.5 million that we did.
Wow. So you did that one as well, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. So that's pretty cool. So you established yourself in the dance community. And were people seeking you out? Or
Yeah, surprisingly, but it was a different world. There wasn't social media. There wasn't the sort of internet access that you could find people. So the in terms of the industry in L.A., people knew me very well because they were like, you know, they knew me. But right. But people in general around the world had no idea who I was or anything like that. And,
right.
But in the industry, I was established, yeah.
Right. So you discovered you're a creative type more, right? You didn't want to, like, get into the business and all that.
Well, the business side of things, it always intrigues me. And I'm always thinking with a business mind. But definitely everything's inspired from the creative side.
Right.
Yeah, because it seems, I mean, you love, obviously, enjoy school. And you've got or went for numerous degrees and stuff, but then you chose a different route.
Right. Yeah. And it's unusual for creative people to be able to sit on their ass in the classroom, you know, and actually learn, you know. You don't see many people that are, you know.
My school in Singapore was so awesome. I recommend the World College Program to anyone who's interested.
Really?
I mean, they have an arts week where you're kind of basically forced to participate in these shows. Like, you can be in a musical, you can be in a dance show, you can be in a drama show. And there's even like a project week where you have to leave the country. You're supposed to leave the country for a week and do a project and come back. And I went scuba diving and parasailing and did a whole report, a photographic essay on my scuba diving. I mean,
that's cool.
It's lovely. I mean, we learned how to sail. We learned how to navigate by the stars. Like, I mean, that's learning. That is what learning should be. It shouldn't be this dead thing sitting in at a desk, like trying to figure out.
Wow. So I'm reading here. I mean, you've done a lot of things. You've done dancing, right? And then I see you were modeling as well. How did you get into that?
Well, I've been working with like Herb Brits on Madonna's tour and stuff, and Jean-Paul Gaultier, who did the costumes, and he invited me to go do his show in Paris. So I flew there to do that, and soon after, I signed with a modeling agency here in L.A., and because I had pictures from all of that, they just started sending me out, and I went to Paris, I went to New York.
Wow. What was that like? I mean, that couldn't have been that challenging for you, right?
Oh, it's so easy. I get upset with models. Like, oh, modeling's so hard. I'm like, oh, screw you. You have no idea what hard is. You know, get in a G-string, then dance for 10 hours and do the same thing and make a third of the money. Or a fifth or a tenth. I mean, they make a lot of money for doing not that much. I get that, you know, the upkeep is a lot, but...
Right.
Good God. It's fun. That was a joy gig. I mean, all those things were just about having fun and making wonderful imagery.
I mean, you've done like the top people. Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein, Fendi, Jean-Paul Gaultier, Jean-Paul Gaultier. And then the people you've performed with, Prince, Ricky Martin, Janet Jackson, Celine Dion, Anastasia, Rihanna, Lady Gaga, Beyonce, Britney Spears, Cher, Christina Aguilera.
All the who's who.
Like,
yeah.
That's incredible.
Do you know many of these people? Did you meet them in person?
Well, if at all of them. I was on stage.
No, I don't know. But because there's so many dancers, you know, sometimes I don't even know. But I guess there's got to be some kind of a connection.
Well, some more than others. I mean, definitely some I've made much more connections with than others. And it's nice being in the industry as long as I have because it becomes sort of a family. You know, I've seen people from the beginning of their career till, like, I was in Celine Dion's first U.S. video.
Wow.
I was in Carmen Electra's first video. Like, I mean, you see the whole course of people's careers, and I have to say, I feel like I'm in a very rarefied position because people respect me a lot for having done the work I've done and having been the person I've been for them, and people have been wonderful.
It's incredible.
To me.
Yeah, it's quite a resume, absolutely. Yeah. So, you were dancing. How many years were you doing all this dancing? I mean, this is a lot of work that you did.
Yeah, no, I've continued dancing even till recently. I still dance off and on, even now. But I've just slowed down on it because I realized that there's other more creative, other creative outlets that I want to pursue and other creative ideas that I have that I want to see come to fruition.
You're so lucky that you have all these, that you're good at all of this. I mean, it all seems like the multi-talented
type of guy.
Well, it all seems like the same thing to me. Being creative is just being creative. So if it's like creative in a book or creative in a photo or creative for modeling or like how I'm posing or how I'm like how I'm approaching something or singing, it's all the same to
me. As long as you're not in an office in front of a computer, you're good.
Exactly.
That's cool. So you did this for a few years and then you said you started having new interests and things like that. What was the next direction you took after dancing?
Well, from dancing, I stepped into a lot of different things. But one of the larger things that's come up, well, the two large things that have come up recently, one is my music that I perform under the name That Rogue Romeo. On iTunes and everywhere else you'd like to find it, www.thatrogueromeo.com.
Okay.
It was one of those things where I knew if I didn't do this, if I didn't do my music and actually release my music, it would be my life's biggest regret because I had these things to say, I had these things I needed to express, and if I didn't want to do it in a studio system where I was being forced to be a certain person or a certain way, then I'm going to put it out myself. And
right.
I did that and very happy I did.
Yeah. Now, were you into music all your life as well?
I was, but, you know, I used to sit at home and sing along to Prince songs and my mom would be like, shut up. And I was like, oh, I must be a terrible singer. And, you know, I won Star Search years ago and we sang two of our songs on that. And then we were working with Capitol Records and it didn't go so well because they expected us to write and we didn't expect them to want us to write.
Right.
So we weren't ready at all. And but when I went to Italy and started doing television in Italy, I started singing on television there because I speak English and I sing in English and whatever. So when they put me on TV there singing, I had a blast. And they signed me to a contract there. So
wow, how did you end up there in Italy?
A good friend of mine, Luca Tomasini, who was also on tour with Madonna in the Girly Show, and we did the Birdcage together. He has done television in Italy for a long time, and he invited me out there to be sort of this prima ballerino in one of their shows, Buona Domenica.
Yeah.
And that was amazing.
How long did you live that for?
Oh, gosh. I was there for, I guess, a year and a half, 2 years. But then I went back every year for like several times a year. Mm-hmm. And it went really, really well. Like, we couldn't go out on the street. They were shaking our car. And,
really?
Like, screaming and fan mail everywhere. Wow. It was obsessive and crazy. Because there was no youth on TV in Italy. And certainly no Asians on TV ever. There's like one now. But like, it's one of those things where I look back and I'm like, wow, that's really unique. Everyone on TV there was 70.
Really?
It's the same people that were on there from the beginning of time. Yeah. Like people, Baudo and Raffaella Carrà, they're still on TV.
Wow.
It's kind of like that in England. It's all older. Yeah, especially in like the news and hosting world. It's all
that's true, huh?
Older,
older generation. That's true. When I go back to Israel, there's still like anchors on TV from when I was 16 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you know, you don't even imagine these people would still be alive, you know, but they're there and they're going strong, you know. So wait a minute. So now you mentioned the Birdcage, and now that's a that's acting now. So now you're into acting as well.
I did some acting.
Do you get a feeling this guy's not only talented but extremely lucky? I mean, God, he lands into all these gigs, you know?
Well, I think the key is having fun.
Yeah.
If you enjoy what you're doing and you're having fun what you're doing, then people see that, you know?
No, that's true, though. But you know what? There's a lot of people that are doing the same thing, you know, and they don't get to rise above a lot of other people, you know? And you, I think, you have that persistence there where you want to go after something and you do it, right? I mean, it seems like it because you've accomplished a lot. I mean, people that just sit on their ass all day, they don't accomplish a lot.
You're very inspiring.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
You've been in a couple of my favorite movies, Sister Act 2,
oh,
Charlie's Angels, and Austin Powers Goldmember.
See, all of those, like, they're exactly what I just said. They're all fun.
Yeah.
They're all wonderful fun. And it's like, again, after all this time being in this business, it's a family affair, you know, like the people that we work with, I tend to know them from other jobs and even the camera people. And the key is having fun. Like, I think that's what the difference between people who are out there and not being successful. I think they're too stressed about what it means to them. And, oh, I need this job. And I don't go into auditions and jobs thinking that. I go into how can I make this job good or how can I enjoy this audition or what can I give to the casting people because they want to find the right people,
right?
They want this to end well, so I go in it for them more than for myself, and it usually lets the pressure off both of us.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah. That's the thing is I think many people are pressured because they feel, oh, I need to make it big, you know. So mm-hmm. they don't really have fun, like you said, you know. Yeah. They're just like too focused on making it big and becoming famous and stuff. And that's usually not a good motivation.
I could be much more famous, quote, quote, quote,
right.
than I am now. I really could have been. There are so many opportunities. But I also had that fame in Italy and I saw also what you give up.
Yeah.
There's a lot
of
benefits, but you give up a lot. And mm-hmm. it was nice being famous over there and coming home and being anonymous, whatever. But I get that I do not want my life to be Britney Spears. I don't want my life to be anything of that sort of hyper celebrity level because it's just not worth it.
Conquer the supermarket in peace.
Yeah, you know. And I admire this because, you know, the thing is that there's too much going on. What do I want to say? I keep spacing out like every day, right? Every
day lately. A lot of people think that they, when they come to Hollywood, it's like, I want the fame and the money,
right.
but they don't really think it through. Yeah.
Right.
That there's a lot that comes with, you have to give up a lot to be quote unquote famous.
Yeah. Right. It takes a really tough skin because you have to put up, it's once you're, fame is not just yay, happy, happy. Like, fame is people shredding you.
Right, exactly.
Because they would like to and they want to, and it's just fun for them. And you have to really just put a wall between you and whatever.
Right. You see, and you consciously made that decision, you know. That's why, you know, when all the celebrities complain about all this, it's like you made that decision.
Yeah.
You know what's involved in fame. You wanted it. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think rarely do people become famous unless they really want to be. You know, famous.
Yeah.
And unless you're the child of Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes or something, then you're not. Then you can't be anonymous no matter what. But at the same time, you see, you made that conscious decision.
Yeah. And I have a lot of sympathy for, I think that's another reason why I work with a lot of celebrities easily, is because I have a lot of sympathy and compassion for what they're living in. I don't treat them like giant celebrities. I treat them like people.
Right.
Because I understand that they're people and they're in a circumstance and they're in this space that's a little bizarre and strange. But I totally can relate to that, and I've been around it for so long. It's just about treating people like real people, and they appreciate that.
Yeah, that's true. So did you start writing your own music?
I did.
You did?
I did, yeah.
Oh, wow. So you brought us a CD here, and there's actually two discs in here, which is quite a bit of work, I would say. So you had a lot to let out, right?
Yes, I did. And I actually mixed it in Italy, in Rome.
Oh, really? Now, how did you write? Do you have a do you play an instrument?
I don't. That's the crazy thing.
Really?
I was like, I kept telling myself for years, I'm like, oh, I can't sing, I can't do music because I don't play anything. And you know what? If you want to make something or do something, you'll find a way. And I worked with producers and found that if I sit with them and create the track with them, like it just comes down to a series of choices and decisions about the sounds and the beats and the rhythms. Work on the track with them. I take it home. I sit with it like obsessively for days and then write the lyrics and melody on top of that.
Wow. That's amazing.
Wow,
you know,
so you pick the tune first?
I create the track first, and then I write whatever the ideas that come out with that, and then I go back and craft the track more to fit with the lyrics and stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, there are two ways to write songs. You can write the lyrics first. You can write the music first. I guess it depends what comes to you.
Yeah.
But it's amazing that you are able to write music without an instrument, you know, so.
I have to memorize it. When I'm singing it and writing the lyrics, I have to literally memorize my melodies and lyrics. And if it sits with me, then that's probably the right thing.
That's true, yeah. Wow, amazing. Yeah. So let's play a couple of your tracks here. You called yourself the Rogue Romeo.
That Rogue Romeo.
Yeah. How did that come about? How did you get that?
I knew I wanted to use a nom d'art because I really didn't want to have my identity tied up into this project.
Just,
so I can make my music into whatever I want to make it into, and it's not tied to me as a person. Like, you know,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, it is.
So I threw out a bunch of words literally on a piece of paper, and those two particularly connected for me. Just the idea of the contrast between this sort of this lover who dies for love and the rogue is sort of the dastardly villain and fiercely individual, you know. So there's, on one hand, there's somebody who needs to be alone or needs to be on their own and doing their own thing, and the other side is the person who can't live without the other.
Sounds good. Well, we're going to hear a track. For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Kevin Stay. You can find more about him at kevinstay.com. And so that's like more like your career things. And we're gonna get to the Great Walls project in a minute. I know you want to talk about that. But let's first play a track You picked Wonderland.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about this song. What is it about?
Wonderland is, it was that moment in which I was realizing, wow, I have a life with somebody here and it's beautiful, but it's not what it seems.
Mm.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of people can relate to that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Great introduction. So here's Kevin Stay, Wonderland.
Understand you anymore. So much for plans of a simple life lost in complexity. You're checking off your list of rules you never told anyone. I am counting down the number of times I can. So things in this life are so beautiful. So many things around us are so rare. Listening, why am I surprised? I don't recognize these words from my lips. To checking off your list of my shiny little white lies. You are counting down the number of times that you'll be there. Look at the times we've had, they've been so magical. Watch them, how they glisten in the light. Look around, what a curious.
Kevin Stay, I'm fading this out because we only have less than 10 minutes and I want to cover the other stuff that you're doing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you have a great voice.
Yeah, you
great
really do.
Music. And you're extremely good looking, extremely creative. I don't know who would want this guy. He's a great catch.
Right?
Yeah.
Here's my number, everybody.
Yeah, there you go. So, okay, so let's go over The Great Walls. That's a new project you're working on? Or
Yeah, I, you know, I didn't grow up with my father, and I realized just recently that I really had never even had dinner with my parents before in the same room.
Wow.
And I made it happen. Yeah. And when I sat there at dinner with them, between them, I realized this is a totally unique experience. Like, most people have had this experience before, and I'm looking at it as an adult, at brand right. new, and getting to like wow. live it like that. And
wow.
I realized, wow, you know, there are things in my life that I have not experienced that I can make happen that don't seem possible. Like, it doesn't seem possible that I would, I didn't see my dad for like 15, 18 years, something like that. And it would seem odd that I would, you know, love him.
Right.
Yeah. Because he wasn't there. You know, I love him as a dad, but I don't really know him.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't really have this level of love for him, or had this level of love for him that was really profound, and as most people have for their parents growing up. And I realized, like, I'm running out of time. You know, my dad is 78. Wow. And what can I do about this?
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I can take it on. And my dad is from China. He escaped in the Civil War in China, and then escaped the Korean War into the U.S.
Wow, that's a lot of escaping.
Wow,
yeah. a lot of drama, a lot of war and violence, and he's never been back since. So I said, let's do it now. Let's go. Let's go back to where you were born, where you grew up, where your dad was born, and see old family and sort of resolve that for your life. And at the same time, I'll get to know you. I'll get to know your past, your history. I've never traveled with him. I've never spent more than a night with him.
Wow.
We've only had a dinner here and there. You know.
Now, why was that? I mean, I know you moved around a lot and stuff, but was that because you guys never developed a close relationship? Or
no, at one point my mom literally just said, "You're not seeing him again."
Oh, did they get divorced or something?
Yeah, they separated, and I flew in to see him in Texas. Mm-hmm. He was living in Texas. My mom was in California. I flew in to see him, and he put me on a plane back.
Mm, really?
Because he didn't have time. Wow. And she was like, "And scene. That's it. You're not seeing him again." And she never talked about him after that. I never heard a word really about him other than that he was strong and liked fancy cars. Mm-hmm. And then I found him when I was 18.
Wow.
I tracked him down.
Quite an interesting life, let me tell you, man. So you decided you're going to take him back to China?
So I decided I'm going to take him back to China and really get to know him that way. And I thought, well, I can't possibly let this opportunity go by without documenting it. So I brought my brother, who is a film major at USC. He's a graduate, film graduate at USC. And his fiance, who is also a film graduate. And because I had to be in front of the camera, kind of being a subject of it as well, I brought them to film it. Mm-hmm. And so then we traveled all around to where he grew up, where he was born, where my grandfather was born, heard all of his stories, most of which I'd never heard of before.
Wow.
Like just traveled to all the different cities that he lived in.
It's time to write a book now. I mean, that's probably one of the things you haven't done yet, right?
I'm already working on it, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I have like 200 pages already.
Unstoppable, this guy. Wow. Go on.
That's incredible, though. And that must have brought out a lot of feelings that you've never really felt.
Oh, my gosh. I am so in love with my dad now.
Aww.
Like, I cannot even express how fulfilling this journey has been. And I don't even know what the end product will really be. I had it as a film, and I have it still. Like, it will be a film. I just don't know where it ends. I don't know if it ends in China, because now that we've finished it, it's like I realize how small a part of China, how small China was in terms of the arc of his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to follow him here when he got, came here to the U.S. I want to find out what happened between him and my mom. And I'm getting that him and I, our relationship is so easy, much easier than I thought.
Wow.
Like, he's so willing to love me, and I'm so willing to love him. There's nothing between us. We're just constantly in conversation. That's fantastic. And I had no idea it was so easy.
Yeah.
But I'm finding there's a lot of other things in the way, family and other sort of structures that have been in place for so long that are kind of that he's suffering over. And I'm realizing that while he's suffering over it, I can see that, wow, I can change that for him, or I can be his support in sort of dealing with that.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it becomes less about me knowing my dad and more about, wow, let me be there for you in fulfilling in your life.
Yeah.
Right. So I see you set up an Indiegogo campaign. And so we have to wrap up the show. So let's give you all the plugs we can. Okay. So talk to us about the Indiegogo, how people can go and support this.
Yeah. Go to Indiegogo.com. The project is called Great Walls. And you can donate there. I literally borrowed and, borrowed, begged, and stole everything I could to make it happen immediately, knowing that he's 78 years old and it had to happen now. I made it happen already. But the fact of the matter is, I don't have that money.
Right.
So I'm really I'm just hitting it hard to try to get the money back so that I can, pay everything back. And
that's cool, though.
I mean, continue, because I really want to do these other cities and, also share with him my life growing up, 15 years that he missed.
Yeah. Right. And I imagine maybe a lot of Chinese Americans would relate to this as well. Although, the general audience would, I'm sure. But for people that want to go back to the roots and everything, I think this would probably be cool. So where can people watch this? Is it out already, the film?
No. I just started shooting in China. We did the whole China leg. We went to
Because I know you
Beijing.
Said you came back from China, so yeah. I thought you completed it.
Well, we completed the first sort of leg of filming. Okay. Like, we went just to get that out of the way and do it and make sure that we had that and see what happened. And now, of course, we're here and we have other things to film. And
awesome. Yeah. Okay. So Indiegogo.com, go to find a campaign for Great Walls, and you can help out there. What else? Your website?
Website, kevinstay.com, just to follow my career, all this stuff. ThatRogueRomeo.com for the music and videos and swag and all that good stuff.
Wow. you just about own half the internet with all your websites.
I'm on MySpace and Facebook and Twitter and Feed and all these other places as Kevin Stay and also as That Rogue Romeo.
Wow.
Okay, sounds good. Kevin, thank you so much. You're a lot of fun. Good luck to you and best of luck with all the projects. You'll have to come back. I'm sure in a year you will have done 20 more things.
Oh,
so.
My gosh, yeah.
I would love to anytime.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Charlotte, thank you. Thanks, everybody, for
have
listening.
A
good weekend. Everybody, everything else, we'll see you on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte right here on LA Talk Radio.